You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Out here, it's not only the amazing views, but the way time stretches out a little longer and how the breeze hits just right at the summit. With All Trails, you can discover nature's best with over 450,000 trails around the world. Download the free app today.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side-effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven, non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's RADIO15 for 15% off today.
It's Sal Capaccio.
I make a special carpaccio for you, right?
Yes. Oh, now that sounds really good.
Oh, you like?
Hey, get away! Get away from my wife with that!
What's the matter, carpaccio, no good?
What do you do now?
They don't like a carpaccio.
They like carpaccio.
Oh. On WGR.
I make a carpaccio for you.
Sports Radio 550.
There are different ways, aren't there, that sort of splash water in your face that football is back. One I just had, listening to Sean McDermott read down injuries. Like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's specific now.
Here we are, right?
It's not a game week or anything, but, you know, his voice, and here are the players who are hurt, and here's what we're going to tell you about what's bothering them. I wasn't all the way ready for that. I have known today was coming for a long time, but I wasn't all the way ready for McDermott's voice breaking down injuries. But of course he would be doing that. Training camp coverage on WGR continues. Here is Sal Capaccio with us on the Wester hotline. Sal, I mean, I think probably for the most part, this is a joyous day for you and for the, you know, for the fans.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I mean, when you cover football for a living, to me, I've always looked at my job as a privilege. You know, it's not a job. It's not work. When you get a chance to do something like this, you love it. So from that standpoint, it's a joyous day to be able to do something you love and get paid for it, no doubt about it. It also represents a big shift in everybody's life, you know, who does this for a living. You know, this is something now that we're a part of every day for the next several months. And out here at St. John Fisher, you know, there's a lot of work to be done and starts early in the morning. I mean, get on the radio at 7. You have a press conference at 9:15, practice at 9:45. After that, I just recorded a podcast with Matt Bove before I came on with you guys. Got an article to write, got more stuff to do tonight. So that's not complaining, just it's a lot, right, to take in. And you just kind of have to keep everything where it needs to be, so to speak. That being said, fans coming out from their perspective, a great chance for them to see their Buffalo Bills again, right? I mean, it's been a long time, and I think every season brings new hope. It doesn't matter if it's 2013 with EJ Manuel and a team that, you know, hasn't made the playoffs at that point in 13 years, or it's 2017 with Sean McDermott coming in, everybody thinking that they're going to be the worst team in the league with some of the moves they made, or right now with the league MVP. I think that, you know, fans – love seeing their Buffalo Bills, and this has been a great partnership here at St. John Fisher for a quarter of a century now, and so much so, it is very, very hard to get a ticket right now, guys.
Yeah, I was just going to say, the next thing I was going to bring up is I can remember feeling as though we needed to get, I think the Bills wanted us to help get the, here's what you, it's the Verizon store, or it's Wegmans, or whatever the outlet would have been.
Yep.
And, you know, here's the process. And, you know, those tickets were available. Now, I don't think not one time, I know for myself, I won't speak for the entire show, I've had some time off, but that doesn't even come up as something. The Bills don't need our help. They just, the tickets just disappear. Like, as soon as they're available, they're gone. It's just, it's crazy. And I don't want to take it for granted, but, I mean, it hasn't been like that for that long, but it's pretty regular now that it just runs itself, kind of.
Yeah, and not only that, Bulldog, even to go even further, I mean, people get upset because they can't get tickets. They try and try, and they just can't get tickets anywhere. I get people asking me all the time, like, can you get tickets to camp? How do you get tickets to camp? Can you help me get tickets to camp? No, it's tough, right? I know a lot of people personally, family members, they can't get tickets to camp. Some people got lucky. They're here. I saw a lot of people I've seen in years past, and whether that's fans or people with, you know, corporate partnerships or something like that. So it definitely is, but it is also a team that now is, you know, they have the league MVP. They've been very, very good, obviously, for a while, and expectations, again, coming into 2025 are really high. And, you know, to get to a Super Bowl and to win a Super Bowl, that's where we've landed, and that's where we remain as this team, you know, arrives at St. John Fisher today.
James Cook did not need a ticket. If he did, he got one on the field. What's your analysis of, from what was said today and what you saw, how this has played out?
You know, we said, and I said with you guys for a while, it either becomes a really big story or becomes no story at all. It's one day of talking about it today. I think after today, I don't know how much we talk about James Cook's contract, to be quite honest. I think the only two ways we talk about it are, A, if he gets hurt, unfortunately, because then it becomes a story of, hey, here's a guy that this is why he wanted to get paid, and now look at him because he has an injury. Or B, just kind of during the season at some point, he has a monster game, or just kind of you look at his usage, and, you know, we're going to say, oh, James Cook's, you know, somebody at the end of the year whose contract's expiring. What are they going to do with him? The other side, though, would have been very, very noteworthy for quite a while. If he had showed up and not done anything and done the hold in, then I think we'd be talking about that now a lot, and it would be something we'd be monitoring every single day. I think because he showed up, because he practiced, because of the messaging that came from Sean McDermott, Brandon Bean, about how good of a teammate he is, how much he wants to be here with his guys and be on the field, I think everything just kind of goes away from the contractual standpoint right now until something else happens to bring it up.
Right. And I wonder, Sal, you and I think have been pretty aligned on this, like not being optimistic that they were going to get something done here during this offseason. But now that we're in camp, I wonder if the Bills, like I assume they had a number, they had some offer for him that didn't meet what Cook was looking for, and so no deal was made. I wonder if all along they've had like an extra, you know, one last try, here's an extra couple whatever, guaranteed monies or whatever it is. Now that he showed up and has been such a, you know, he's not been a disturbance at all. I mean, the only disturbances have been on social media. Like, to the team, he's been at everything he was supposed to be at, and he's participated. So I wonder if there's one last, like, well, we were willing to go to, I'll pick a number, 10. Here's 11.5 or 12 or, you know, we're willing to give you 17 million guaranteed. Here's 22. You know, it's just something to try to bridge the gap between what he might have been looking for and what their, you know, their number was. Like, I wonder if they've always had like a second ceiling, so to speak, for a moment like this.
You never know. They don't obviously tell us those things, right. But I wouldn't be surprised, right? If there was something like that going on. So when Brandon Bean sat down today, like, I happened to shoot off the first question to him, and I hope it was a solid question, because my fear is we ask a bad question, it's on Hard Knocks, to be quite honest with you. Like, I think about that now.
You're going to be on
right?
point.
Like, oh my God, yes. Like, I asked a bad question, and all of a sudden now I'm a meme on Hard Knocks. I asked him to take us through, like, what's been the dialogue? What's been the history between the James Cook's representatives and you up until now? And, you know, he said they have a good relationship, maybe a great relationship, whatever, especially with James. He's kept an open dialogue with his representatives. And he said he'll continue to keep an open dialogue with his representatives, right? Which is to say nothing's closed off. You never know. Maybe something happens here at camp. Maybe something happens during the season. Now, I don't think that's necessarily going to happen. I think just based on what we've heard from James Cook and seen on social media, what we know about kind of how the Bills feel about that position and their allocation of resources, it doesn't feel like that's going to happen. So that gets me to, okay, James Cook is here. He's practicing. He squawked on social media about, you know, what he wanted. But at the end of the day, like, did he have to do that then? Like, why did he do that? You know, because it almost seems I have it in my head, the way he looked and the way he sounded at minicamp when he was asked about it. This is me giving commentary on this. I don't know. He didn't say this, but it almost felt like regret. You know what I mean? It almost, to me, I felt like he almost regretted putting that out there. The way he treated it, he almost didn't even acknowledge that he put those numbers out there. Instead of backing it up and saying, yeah, you know, hey, I want to get paid, I'm worth it. He said, I like my money, that's why I'm here. But when he was asked, like, why did you send that message of that money? I don't know, it's just something I did. And if I felt like, okay, well, if that's the case, like, it was kind of, not that it mattered at that time of the offseason, but it became a bit of a distraction, I think, from just everything else. Not that a distraction on the field yet, because they weren't practicing, but you guys know what I mean. Like, it just seems like, okay, what was the purpose for that then?
Again, it's poker. I just won the last hand, and I've got all these chips in front of me, and even though I have 9-3 off suit, here, let's go. Raise. Oh, no, oh my God, I have 9-3. Oh, my God, I wasn't even thinking about my hand. I don't know. It was meaningful to me that you said, how you said yesterday you were just a little bit confused by, or Monday, how he was talking. And we listened to a different clip from him, and he was the same way, I thought. I was confused. Like, he was kind of saying everything. What I deserve, but I don't want to be a cancer. If it's a poker game, the Bills, at least to this point, read him right, because maybe they just didn't take him that seriously as somebody that would stay away. And what happened? He didn't stay away.
Well, listen, I've said this to you guys. I know for sure I said it on It's Always Game Day in Buffalo, and I've been right about my conviction on Brandon Bean on this. And you guys know this, and I'm sure you would have said the same thing. You know how Brandon Bean operates. Brandon Bean wasn't about to go to where the numbers we heard James Cook wanted to. Like, once we kind of knew where Brandon Bean stood on it, it wasn't happening. Now, it doesn't mean he can't get something done at a different number, but there was never a chance for me, once we knew kind of what James Cook was putting out there with $15 million, how Brandon Bean talked about pivoting to other guys because, you know, just they couldn't get on the same page. I never saw Brandon Bean caving, so to speak, to anything that James Cook, that type of money.
Bean wouldn't go to $15 million, and Cook wouldn't go to the mattresses on this. Like, everybody's just sort of okay so far. One last thing for me on him, because he's not the only thing going on here, is the word hopeful that Bean used, maybe to your question about Cook being here next year. It's another way of sounding, I think, that makes you think, like, yeah, you know, if he comes over to where we think is a realistic place, we'll do it.
That's right. I agree with that. But it's also just that, you know, you have him, you still have levers you can pull to keep him in a Bills uniform next year, right?
Right.
You have a franchise tag.
It's up to them.
Transition tag. Yeah. So Brandon Bean talking like that, I think what he's basically telling you is, you know, he's not going to burn bridges here. He's not going to say something that makes James Cook say, okay, forget it. I want to be in another organization, another team. He's not even telling you he's going to have he's hopefully get a contract extension. He's just like, yeah, he's on our team. We love him, and we hope he's here next year. There's other ways that they can do that.
Right. Most ideally, Cook coming to their number eventually because he realizes that, you know, whatever he was hoping for isn't going to materialize. And, you know, bird in the hand. That's why I mentioned, like, you know, I don't mean to be like trying to play both, like walk both sides of the street here. I've not been optimistic about them getting something done. But I just wonder if at this point, the way Cook has acted, showing up and everything, if whatever amount of guaranteed money that is going to be, you know, maybe four times the amount he's going to get paid this year if he just plays out this last year of his contract, might look pretty good at this point, unless he wants to just bet on himself. But, you know, that bet comes with, you know, there's a downside, and that's, you know, what happens if something goes wrong and you're injured and now the whole thing sort of goes up in smoke.
Yeah, and look, as of now, as of today, as of July 23rd, the start of training camp, James Cook is here. He's practicing. I did not see him do anything any differently than he normally would do in any other practice. We'll see if that remains the same. And we go forward here, and he's a guy going into the last year of a contract, just like a guy like Connor McGovern.
Sal, Some have asked me to ask you, what was the highlight of the day? The best of training camp brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Get a Northtown engine shield engine protection warranty on new and used vehicles.
Well, the highlight was, you have big picture, small picture, but it's related. The highlight was Max Hairston. He had a really fantastic play that the Bills actually tweeted out a video of, and you guys can watch that. It's a slow motion from the back of the end zone. KJ Hamler is like wide open. He's the only guy in the frame. The ball's coming to him from Mitch Trubisky, and out of nowhere, Max Hairston comes and makes the play on the ball. And I would say that was just representative of the type of day Max Hairston had. He had a really good day out here. And, I mean, after OTAs and minicamp and, you know, trying to line up right a few times, having a bit of an uneven, you know, camp, a couple plays here, a couple, you know, times he got beat there, I wasn't that optimistic he'd come here and just kind of get right in and look good with the ones or the twos. And, you know, him and Tre'Davious White both doing that. But he did. He had a couple of nice plays. That was one of them. And the other that I noted in my story at WGR550.com was there was a throw to Curtis Samuel, and Hairston was like one-on-one on the outside. It was a red zone period. Curtis Samuel caught it just as he's going to the sideline. And if Hairston doesn't get there as quick as he does, he might turn upfield. But because he got there so quick, he just rode him out of bounds. It was a minimal gain. That play, both plays, are just an example of how fast he is and how quick he can get to the football.
We talked about whether there would be Dalton Kincaid observations. Are there any?
Mm-hmm. There are. He had a very nice day today overall. Caught a couple of passes, a couple of touchdowns. I think both from Josh, if I remember correctly. I know at least one. Now, I would say with the caveat, one of them, I'm pretty sure Josh would have been sacked, you know, but they don't do that here at training camp, obviously. So the play stayed alive. So Dalton had another second, you know, catch the ball. He did in the back of the end zone. And on the other one, he worked his way back from the back of the end zone. It was a really nice play by him. Like, he was in the back of the end zone. There were two defenders. He kind of saw Josh back there looking around. So he worked his way back right upfield. Josh kind of put it in a really good spot so that when he came forward, he kind of moved in between the two defenders to get it. And he surprised him. So I like that. Now, as far as anything, him getting bigger, I tried to look at that. It's tough to tell. These guys are, right. You know, I mean, these guys are professional athletes. But, yeah, I tried to make an observation that I do think his arms and shoulders do look a little bit broader, you know, but I don't know. I'm not sitting there comparing, you know, Zapruder film to, you know, what he was last year.
What about the stuff with the guys who didn't work today? Is there anything? Mm-hmm. It doesn't sound like there's anything to be alarmed about, but I want to just, you know, clear that with you.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it. I agree, especially considering Sean McDermott and Brandon Beans, one of them, the way they basically phrased it, which is we're going to be overly cautious when it comes to the veterans, Dawson Knox and Spencer Brown, because these guys know what we do, right? They don't have to rush back. You can wait on them. When they're ready, they'll play. They have all the trust in their medical staff. I was a bit concerned when they signed a tight end, Matt Sokol. We were on the air yesterday when you guys and I said, hey, you could have anything happen here at any moment. And sure enough, it did right at that moment. And as at that moment, when I was saying, you know, about 24 hours ago, you know, I'd be a little concerned because they signed a tight end. But I think that's because what we learned today, Dawson has a hamstring injury. So you want to make sure you give that some time, right? I mean, it's not worth putting Dawson Knox out there in week one of training camp or even week two maybe and putting him out there any earlier than it has to be out there. So you got to have guys get some reps so that guys like Dalton Kincaid and Jackson Hawes aren't out there taking every single rep. And you have to have a plan there. So that's why they did that. So the word is basically Dawson Knox hamstring. He's on the NFI, not football injured. Spencer Brown back, as Sean said, flared up a bit. Didn't seem like there's anything he's too overly concerned about. But, you know, with Spencer Brown's back injuries history.
Go on. I think I know what happened. I think Sal was finally lashing back at not getting a Yankees question after they won one. Enough with these guys. Always when they lose. They always have a Yankees question.
I was saving Yankee questions for the end.
I had one too.
Yeah, right.
But
we got your back, Sal.
I think he just felt like enough already with these two.
Yeah.
That's his way of protesting. He went to the mattresses.
Sal, we clipped off there talking about Dawson Knox. So the other
yeah, my apologies.
It happens. Laviska Shenault, you know, tough. You know, he's a long shot to make it to begin with, and to be not there to start is not great.
Agreed. And I was going to say same thing, so thank you. You're right. Laviska Shenault needs to be on the field. He's not like Dawson Knox. He's not like Spencer Brown, where if he's not on the field, you know, right now, it's going to be fine. He'll be fine. But Laviska Shenault needs to be available. He needs to be on the field. That wasn't the case today, so we'll see what happens tomorrow. Lower leg strain is the way that Sean McDermott termed it.
Did your son further his quest to see Anthony Volpe traded after that mid-game throwing error last night, number 13?
We did not see the throwing error last night. We got home late. We had maybe one of the longest ever major division 10, 11-year-old baseball games ever played.
Uh-oh.
That's because once you get to the playoffs, the time limit is 2:15 before you can start a new inning, not 1:50 like the regular season. But it was awesome and intense, and it went a full 2:20 probably. And it's double elimination. They were the one seed. Our team is the two seed. They were undefeated all year, the team we played, my son's team. And, guys, it was awesome. And it went down to the last inning with literally, like, we wound up winning and giving them their first loss of the year and the only loss in the double elimination. And it came down to 5-4 in the sixth with the tying run on base and the winning run at the plate, and then we wound up getting out of it. So it was really cool. So, no, we didn't see that. Anyway, I just had to throw that because it was a super cool baseball
game. Yeah, right. Well, both of us were watching the Yankee game for you.
Oh, good.
I was watching the Jays, but sure.
I came home. I did first thing I saw. Okay, 4-4. Come on. What are you doing here? I didn't realize they blew the lead, and they had been up, and then I saw that happen. And then, you know, the Ben Rice home run obviously was just monstrous. They needed that. Devin Williams still scares me coming in, but he's a lot better now than he was early in the season, so I'm a little more confident. But it got a little hairy there at the end, but they needed that.
Do teams play games with the time limit?
No, I haven't seen that. I've seen that in tournament play before. I haven't seen it in our type of league, and it wasn't even close to that. You know, you can't start a new inning after a certain time, and yep. I mean, guys, it was already – the game started at 6. It was 7:05, and we're in the third inning. That's a long little league game, right?
Been there.
And we're like, holy cow. But it was also – at that time, it was 3-1. It was low scoring. So you know, you still had a good game going on. So, anyway, that means the championship, so to speak, is Saturday. And if the team Max plays on wins, they're the champions. They win. If they lose, it comes down to one final game between them and whoever beats them, because we got to lose twice. That comes down next Tuesday, and I would be home for that because the Bills practice on Tuesday, not on Wednesday.
And they're on the field tomorrow and Friday, right?
Tomorrow and Friday. So the way this schedule works this year is three on, one off, three on. They are practicing 6 out of the first 7 days of camp. So, yeah, they'll be on the field tomorrow. It's going to be very hot tomorrow.
Yeah.
During the afternoon, the heat index is like 100 degrees. So, you know, I know people have asked, would they practice in the heat? Yes. I mean, that kind of heat, I don't know. But it's not going to be like that kind of hot heat when they practice. And they did end a little earlier today. It wasn't even noon when they got – it was like 11:30 when they ended today.
And do you have an idea at this point when pads will go on for the first time? I know teams more and more, you know, really ease into that, but eventually they will get to, you know, pads and some live hitting and goal line and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it'll either be Sunday or Monday next week. I'm not really sure on that exactly. So either Sunday or Monday next week, I'm pretty sure. I think they have to go 3 days without pads and that. But sometimes, a lot of times when you come back after a day off, you know, coaches don't want to get you right into pads. You want to get you acclimated again with your bodies, and then they'll put the pads on the next day. But, you know, it's funny. I just did the podcast with Matt, like I said, and Matt was talking about how he was really impressed with TJ Sanders and Deion Walker today. And I'm not here to tell you you shouldn't be. Like, I think that they were both, you know, impressive in their own right when I saw them. But I'm going to be super honest. I don't watch a lot of the line when there's no pads on, guys. Like, I'm really looking a lot.
Right.
I'm more looking at reps. I'm looking who's where. I'm looking at the skill position, guys. I start paying attention to the O-line and the D-line a lot more once the pads come on.
Very good. Thank you, Sal.
You got it, guys.
That's our man, Sal Capaccio. His appearances are brought to you by New York's only outlet, Liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
Coverage of Bills Camp from St. John Fisher, brought to you by Fiegel, Carr, and Joyce, your border attorneys. By Outlet Liquor, when you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Connors and Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys, and driven by your Upstate Honda dealers for great deals on the entire Honda lineup. Visit your Upstate Honda dealer today.
You know what I just did? I just told on myself. I didn't proofread the sponsors because I didn't need to do the Outlet Liquor read. It was in there.
Yeah, it's in there.
And I should. Yeah.
Well, they deserve it.
Yeah, good for the double dip.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Out here, it's not only the amazing views, but the way time stretches out a little longer. How laughter bellows louder among friends, and how the breeze hits just right at the summit. With All Trails, you can discover and experience the best of nature. With over 450,000 trails worldwide and navigation right at your fingertips. Find your outside with All Trails. Download the free app today and find your next outdoor adventure.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Keon's his hardest critic, right? And I love that about him. I don't want to pigeonhole him to say, like, hey, this is what he has to do. And if he doesn't do this, he's not taking a step. Like, I have so much confidence in Keon. Maybe I'm clearly higher on how Keon played last year based off some of the questions I've gotten. But I love his approach, his mindset. He goes out there again. Once the pads come on, that's when I believe truly wide receiver play happens. The physicality element, when DBs have their hands on you, being able to make the plays. But I love Keon's approach. He's one of the smartest wide receivers we have.
Joe Brady on Keon Coleman, of course, right? It's all actually great. Could Keon Coleman actually be his harshest critic? Maybe.
That's probably not right.
Probably not, but maybe. He was tough on himself back a month ago talking about the season and how bad he thought he was. If you believe him, if he really thought that, which I guess I would want to. What's a good enough year for Coleman? Last year, 29 for 556 and 4. That's a great yards per catch. Davis-esque yards per catch. Yeah. But we're not going to be able to live with 29 catches in 17 games.
No. I think right now, I want to be careful because I don't want to overdo this. You're more in tune with projections and that sort of stuff from your fantasy dabbling.
Obsession?
Dabbling.
I do dabble.
Yeah, 60 catches, 8 touchdowns. I would sign for that right now.
Double both.
Yeah.
You're not going to double the yards.
No.
I'd get to 1,100 yards probably.
Yeah, no.
What a player, though, if it's 60, 1,100, and 8. I mean, that's big time.
That's hot. Yeah.
That's hot.
That's a threat.
So you like 60. I mean, it would be cool if the Bills ever had a receiver that would, you know, like be a go-to guy for touchdowns. They just haven't needed it.
Right.
I mean, Diggs did.
Maybe even six. Maybe 60 and six, even. I don't need to rush to eight, but, you know, I think I would sign for 60 and six, even.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 900 yards or something, 800 yards. I don't know.
I would definitely take that season.
Yeah.
For him?
And I think that would be good. It would, yeah, and I'm not saying like that's the best he could do. I think that would be a good second season for him. I don't know that I would then expect him to go to like 90 the next season or something, but that's a dependable receiver. I think it's not, you know, earth shattering. It's not like franchise, you know, alpha dog kingpin number one guy, but it's good. And I would take good right now from Keon Cole.
Me too. What do you want here? Do you want the trivia? Do you want the mystery guest? What are you more
ready for? Fielder's choice. No, that doesn't make sense.
You're the fielder.
I guess.
I'm the pitcher.
I would like to save the 20 questions exercise about the mystery guest for when we/I am more warmed up.
Okay.
Not that
considering the heat.
Not that I treat the 3 o'clock hour like batting practice or something, or like the driving range. But I'd rather get to that later.
You want the trivia?
Yeah.
Okay. This is more just an opportunity to name some fun names.
Okay.
More than anything else. So there's nothing bad here. Like if you bomb on this question, nobody should blame you, really. Like it's pretty obscure, random question.
I appreciate knowing that ahead of time because I'm definitely, you know, the potential to bomb is always there.
Let's go back to the year 1995, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
What do you remember about the Bills season? David White.
Right.
The David White game. An interception late in a game, late in the season against Miami that led to a division title. Not the most memorable game necessarily. 2 weeks later, they met again in the playoffs.
The Bills had 341 yards rushing in that playoff game.
More memorable. Yes. All right.
David White is more memorable to me because I was there, and I was not there for many, really no important games at all. Through the 90s, the only other game I went to was the Raiders' regular season loss in 92, is that?
Or 93.
Or 93, I can't remember
which
year it is.
They played them in the 93 playoffs.
Yeah.
I think that was the same, Hostetler.
Yeah.
I think that was the same year.
I went to that game, and that felt horrible. Because, you know, I finally get to go to a game, the Super Bills.
They lost.
Yeah. But David, I was at that David White game.
Anyway. In 1995, the Bills played 18 games. 16 regular season, 2 playoffs. And according to the great Gridiron Uniform website, which has the announcers for every game, they had 12 different play-by-play announcers do all of their 18 games in 1995. How many can you name?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, no.
We're just going to remember some names here. Now, listen.
1995.
The Bills in 94 came down. They missed the playoffs, but the previous 4 years were Super Bowl years. So they often, like now, drew the top primetime games, top crews. So this is not – I'm not asking you to tell me who broadcast their games in 1985. Which would be a very different list.
Thank you. You're right. It would be college interns.
College interns called 11 of their games in 1985, and there were only 16. All right. So, who is somebody that called a Bills game in 1995?
Dick Enberg has to be on.
Dick
this
Enberg
list.
Is right. It might have only been one, but he is right.
Marv Albert.
Marv Albert is correct. He had, I think, the most. He had the playoff game in Pittsburgh that they lost to end the season.
Bruce Smith flu game.
Right. He had a couple of late season games that were important, maybe even the David White game, maybe. He had Chris Collinsworth in the booth. Okay. That was his partner in 1995. So Marv Albert is correct. You got two. Who else? I like the trivia of who did the Tim Tyndale game. Because this might have been the only NFL game or a Bills game, I should say, that this person ever called for the network.
All right, I don't want to get too hung up focusing on that. because I'm not sure. Fair. You know, whatever. I mean, it's going to be one of the random people who hopefully their name pops into my head soon, because right now I'm sitting on one name and I don't know if it's going to be right at all, but I'm going to just say Dick Stockton.
Incorrect.
Darn.
I mean,
why not?
Why? He was sick. They did not get Dick Stockton, but they did get several other legends. Enberg is a legend. Marv Albert is a legend. This guy is. This guy might be. This guy definitely is. This guy I'd say is. And that guy is. And then most of the other ones are also pretty famous for different reasons.
Would there still have been, I mean, despite being down in 94, they still would have rated Monday Night Football. So Al Michaels is on this list.
That's right. A game in Cleveland. Belichick's Browns that the Bills win.
Oh, yeah, yeah. All right. Yeah.
So Al Michaels is right. They would have also been on Sunday Night Football in 1995 on ESPN.
Well, that's Mike Patrick, isn't it?
Mike Patrick. And TNT.
Oh,
they split Sunday Night Football in these years.
Yeah.
And their opener in Denver was on TNT.
That is the first my debut on the radio was the Monday after that game.
I thought so.
And I think my dad called in, and it was awkward. And it has never, 30 years now, it has never not been awkward anytime someone who is a friend or family calls the show. And I know it. If I don't know it and it just goes by without them identifying themselves, it's fine. As soon as they tell me, like, hey, it's your friend, whatever, like, I don't know, a switch flips and I just make it weird.
This is Bulldog telling everyone never do that.
just don't ever do that.
Call them after.
So who, oh, man.
You've liked this guy for a long time.
Boy, I just don't know.
I will tell you that Ernie Johnson was on the sidelines.
Wow. You're going to have to give me the TNT guy.
Vern Lundquist.
Oh, man. Yes.
So
love Vern Lundquist.
Announcers who called Bills games in 1995 for the network. Vern Lundquist. Al Michaels, Marv Albert, Dick Enberg, Mike Patrick, the late Mike Patrick. You're not getting the playoff, the Dolphins game guy with Dick Vermeil? I've never spoken to him. I'd love to.
The only other name that is springing to mind here is not someone that I would expect you to describe as a legend. But is Greg Gumbel on this list anywhere?
No.
Okay. Too early for him, probably?
I don't know. Maybe.
Okay.
Wasn't a fan.
Yeah. I don't I do not remember who called that playoff game.
Brent Musburger.
Oh.
So
yeah.
look at right do we pass the test here for this question? Like the
Brent
names on
Musburger,
this list.
NFL play by play. Like I don't remember that even ever happening. I remember him, obviously, NFL Today with Jimmy the Greek and Phyllis George. And
he did a few playoff games
for
ABC.
I don't remember him in the booth at all. College games, yes.
The biggest.
I do not remember him in the booth for NFL games.
Musburger might have had, like, Vince Young.
USC,
Matt
Texas.
Matt Leinart. Yeah, he might have had that. So here are a couple more. Tom Brenneman.
Okay.
Right? Like, that's a funny name
to
have be on a list like this for CBS, I think. Or was it even Fox then? Maybe it was Fox then. 1995.
No, it would have been NBC and CBS, I think.
95?
Still. Yeah, because Enberg was NBC, right?
Yes.
So, yeah, I don't think Fox was in the picture yet.
Okay.
It still would have been CBS and NBC, I think.
Very well.
Like CBS doing the NFC games.
Very well. Tom Brenneman, Kenny Albert.
Wow.
Right?
That's pretty early.
It is. 1995, the home opener against Carolina, with Frank Reich being quarterback for Carolina. Kenny Albert with Anthony Munoz. Okay?
Wow.
Are you having any fun yet?
Wow, these are some names.
Dan Hicks.
Wow, Dan Hicks. That's very early for him, too, I think.
I think he did some NFL before he went over into golf and swimming.
Right.
he's still working. He had the open last week.
On the open, that's right.
Dan Hicks called a Bills game in 1995. Jim Lampley.
Get out of here.
Jim Lampley did one Bills game in his career.
And it was 1995.
The home game against Seattle in 1995 was Jim Lampley. Right? Good? Good?
Yep.
Tom Hammond did several games for the Bills. I thought he was very good. And who did I not mention? Jim Donovan.
Don't remember Jim Donovan at all.
Wasn't he the Browns announcer?
It sounds right. Tom Hammond is like horse racing, right? Like he does a lot
horse
of
racing.
He does a lot of the NBC horse. Even now, I think he does that.
Right? Like what range here we've got?
Right.
Lampley, boxing, Hicks, golf, Lundquist, college football, golf, the Masters. Tom Hammond, horses. Kenny Albert, hockey might be his most.
Marv Albert, everything.
Everything. And basketball, mix, quintessentially. Right, basketball. And right. Musburger. I mean, this is a pretty good list.
That is a really good list. Al Michaels. Yeah.
Al Michaels.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a who's who.
It is a who's who. That's exactly what it is.
90s broadcasting.
And just people that you would not necessarily think of as being in the booth for the NFL.
I think the name there, as much as I'm surprised to hear Vern Lundquist's name, it's not that surprising to me that he would have been in the booth doing a Bills game. Jim Lampley, right? If that's Seattle, you said?
Yes.
So, and Seattle, that's an AFC game still.
They're
in the AFC. Okay, that's still before they moved. So I'm thinking, like, that's CBS. I don't remember Jim Lampley. I don't remember Jim Lampley at NBC or CBS, honestly. ABC.
Nope.
Always ABC to me.
I remember
and
him.
HBO, obviously, with boxing.
Boxing. Yeah, I should have, if I didn't say that.
You did. You mentioned boxing is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that would be the sport you'd think of first for him.
For sure.
I mean, the preeminent.
Yes.
Boxing play-by-play, like at least post-Cosell.
Yes.
Lampley and Bob Golic. October 95, Seattle at Buffalo. I loved this one. I mean, I didn't look at other years, just sort of fell into that one.
Right.
But I would guess there isn't another year where the list of announcers are all like super famous and now, 30 years later, better known for other sports.
Right, yeah.
There it is. Coming up at 4, Kevin Bowen on the Colts. Yesterday, I called their quarterback battle the most interesting training camp battle, in the NFL. I guess that, of course, that's debatable. We'll catch up on the Colts, who are not on the Bills schedule this year, Indianapolis. But what's going to happen there? Sal Capaccio later today as well. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here, 803-0550. This is WGR.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Bills camp day two. Out at St. John Fisher University. I'm so old, it was college when I went there. You went to Buffalo State College, I believe it was called when you were a student. Now it's everybody's university. Now
Canisius
everybody's so fancy.
University, that sounds great.
Everybody's so fancy. Sal with us now on what was probably a pretty hot second practice of camp, although these morning practices help a little bit. I don't know, Sal, were you thinking that? Did it feel like you were getting a break this morning?
I think as bad as it could get and as bad as it got during the afternoon, for sure. I mean, people have said to me, I've received a lot of texts today. Hey, how you doing? You staying hydrated? Things like that.
Right.
And I'm like, look, it could be a lot worse. We could be out here in the afternoon, but it's in morning practice. And obviously that helps, right? So, yeah, it could have been a lot worse. I think this should be like the hottest day out here. But camp gets like this sometimes. And they've had two shorter practices so far. And I don't know if that's by design initially, or if the heat plays into it, maybe a little bit of both. But it went today to like maybe 11:35. Same thing yesterday, and you know they could go a little longer, but they haven't.
So you wrote at our website WGR550.com about how the Bills spent some time today getting the ball down the field, 15 to 20 yard pass plays. You know, of course, he's not going to get hit, right? You take as much time as you need. But did you feel that this was like today's point of emphasis?
I did. And I wonder if it was something going in that they wanted to concentrate on that, or if it was, that's just kind of the way the plays developed. Knowing how practices work this time of year, my guess is they really wanted to work on this specific part of the game. And, hey, we're going to look to this area of the field, and we're going to try and hit some balls there. And I thought that the offense was successful in doing that. And, of course, that comes with the other side of the ball, doesn't make the plays. You know, I mean, you always want some give and take. But I thought the offense had a better day today than they did yesterday, and especially in the intermediate passing game, which I do think they intentionally concentrated on.
Yeah, some of what I've read, including from you, indicated that maybe Keon Coleman had certainly a much better day than you. I don't think he caught a ball yesterday. Not that I'm one that's keeping stats on this or anything, but I found out he didn't catch a pass yesterday when I heard him being complimented today. But a good day for him, you'd say?
I would say so, yeah. I put a video up today of the pre-practice period, the warm-up period, you know, the quarterbacks throwing routes to receivers, because obviously once they go to offense against defense, we can't do that. We can't shoot any video. And the reason why I put it up was because it relates to what happened during there, which is there was a play, there was a throw. Keon Coleman makes an in-cut from Josh, probably about 10 yards down the field. He catches the ball, and I mean, immediately he puts his foot in the ground and turns upfield. And I got to tell you, it sounds simple. It really does. But that's one of those little coaching points you learn when you're very young. And when you tell receivers, you catch that ball, you don't stay on your path for two or three steps, right? You know what I mean? You could catch it and just keep riding and then get upfield. It's you catch it and you go, like a running back trying to get to the edge. And he did that really well. And then guess what happened during the 11-on-11? Same kind of thing. Going the other way, he catches it right around, you know, maybe I'd say 25 yards downfield on this one. It's a pretty deep throw from Josh Allen, and he found himself in a really good spot, caught the ball, and he just turns up the field, then he gets to the sideline, and, you know, that was a notable play for me. I think that he had a good day. I think Curtis Samuel was the guy today for me that I really latched onto. I thought he had a really strong day today. He worked that intermediate range really well. They threw it to him in all levels of the field, but especially that intermediate range, I thought he made a couple of really nice plays.
Well, I really wonder about him. I mean, I know going back to a year ago at this time before he suffered the toe injury during that was joint practices in Pittsburgh, if I remember correctly, it was like, wow, how many different things are they going to do with him? You know, just the variety of ways that you could utilize a player with his skill set. And you know, you go through the year and it's such kind of a downer of a year mostly until really the very end for him. I think maybe we should be thinking about starting that conversation over again, right? Like all the different things they may want to do with Curtis Samuel. If he's healthy, maybe he's really an interesting factor in this offense.
Yeah, listen, I mean, you guys, we've talked long enough where you know that's kind of how I felt always about Curtis Samuel going into this year. I think last year was kind of a bit of a wash for what they wanted to do. It's almost like, as you said, you start over. I think the same plan is in place for Curtis Samuel. They want him to be a matchup guy. They want him to be a guy that they can put all over the field in different spots, including in the backfield. He's played running back, right? I think we saw a little glimpse of that in training camp last year, but you could, because he's played running back, you could put him in the slot. You could put him outside. He can win at different levels because he does actually have really good speed. Unfortunately, we just didn't see all that come together last year. And I think because of time on task with the injury, a lot of that, you know, you have a lot on your plate when you're supposed to do that. And then just the timing of everything gets messed up. I think you just kind of start over from that regard, to be quite honest with you. And you put him back in that position and say, this is why we brought him here. And we still think he can be that guy.
Is there anything to say about Elijah Moore yet?
No. He is just, he's got really good feet. I notice him right off the line of scrimmage. He's got really good feet. I haven't noticed him in the 11-on-11 or 7-on-7 portion as much as I do when I'm watching like the one-on-one. Like when you're standing next to him and you watch the physical skill set of him just kind of releasing against air, running a route, like he looks like a really good athlete who has suddenness to him. You could tell that. I haven't seen much happen with him in the 7-on-7 or 11-on-11. I mean, one point to make here about Keon to circle back, and I think this kind of goes for everybody since we're talking about receivers, though. I really like the point that Joe Brady made today. Now, Joe didn't say it like this, but he basically is what he said, which is don't judge Keon Coleman until you get the pads on. This isn't his game. Keon Coleman's game isn't shorts and a T-shirt, right? Keon Coleman's game is physicality, when you try to put hands on him and how he can win separating from you as you're running down the field. Right now you can't do that. He could put hands on him. You're not fighting. You're not hand fighting right there, right? He can't use his strengths in this environment right now. And I really like that point. To me, it's the same reason I say I don't really watch O-line and D-line right now, because I'm not really gaining anything. What am I doing? They're just going against each other and putting their hands on each other's chests and moving a little bit. I think that goes here too. I want to see that with Elijah Moore, not because of the physicality in the same regard as I want to see with Keon Coleman. I want to see what happens when they're pressing, you know, Elijah Moore at the line of scrimmage, and he has the ability with his feet to kind of make a difference here because they can't necessarily get him.
I did see his name come up today in my feed while practice was going on, but it was more to be a compliment, I think, to Matt Milano, who chased him down pretty capably on an end-around try, if I read that correctly.
Matt Milano is just such a good athlete. He really is. I mean, he made a couple plays today that it's almost to the point where, like, I guess I did note one of them. I did write about it. I tweeted about it. I wrote about it. But he makes these plays. They're so routine for him, it seems like. And I know that he hasn't been on the field. But he just – that's what he does. He diagnoses. He gets to a spot. He is so good at getting to a spot on the field before anybody else because he's so good at understanding how to do that. It's seeing it and diagnosing it. But it's also the angle you take and the path you take. I mean, I don't know this. I'll have to ask Matt. I bet you Matt was a running back in his life. You know what I mean? Like, he has the vision to understand how to get to a spot so well. It's great.
So there's no equivalent here. Like, cornerbacks, they say, are cornerbacks because they can't catch. I don't know if Milano had fumbling issues or something as a running back, if he did play the position. Would that or something else qualify as the best of camp today? It's brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Get a Northtown Engine Shield engine protection warranty on new and used vehicles. And we'll find out later why Bulldog reacted like that.
Well, I'll tell you right now why, because I'll be honest. Sal, go ahead. Tell us what you think it is, but I think I know what you're going to tell me.
It's not any of that stuff.
Right.
Bulldog?
Yep.
It's
no.
James Cook's play today.
Yep.
James Cook had a legit, I think. I say it like this because, as I tweeted, you can never know when a play will actually be stopped in this environment, right? Because they blow the whistle as guys get close to you. So even though guys always are taught to continue to run for a touchdown, and it's so funny. The fans are like, yeah, there he goes. I'm like, yeah, he would have been stopped for a two-yard gain, actually. But they're not tackling him, so he just runs out. That wasn't the case for this little, like, swing pass caught in the flat by James Cook. Like, I think he legitimately had a 70-yard touchdown on this play, to be quite honest with you. He caught the ball in the flat. Reggie Gilliam was in front of him, makes a block. I don't remember who was out there. It was a corner. And he made one cut and then got to the sidelines, and bam, he was off to the races. And then the only other guy left deep was DeMar, and Tyrell Shavers got in his way. And again, can't block, but he got in his way enough where – I think James Cook would have made this a legit 70-yard touchdown. So much so that I'm confident in saying that Deion Dawkins brought that play up when he talked with us after practice today and said, I think he would have had a 70-yard touchdown. And I'm like, yep, I think he would have too.
What about Cook and his comments today? We've talked about this all the time. And when last we spoke before camp started, you mentioned how back at minicamp, you weren't entirely clear on what he was going for or what his motives exactly were, or what his plan was. Maybe that's the better way to put it. Today, he was asked, among other things, about whether he considered a hold-in or not being here. And he said, to one of or both of those things, he said, I'd never really thought about it. Well, that's interesting. It furthers my state of confusion about this. Like, what actually was the strategy here with Cook?
Well, I think to James' credit, when we say this, right, to talk about this, which I agree, everything you just said, Mike, there was never that threat. Like, nobody put that threat out there. That was always a speculation by all of us, by people in the media. Like, we never heard James Cook say he wouldn't come and show up, except for the one maybe answer he gave at minicamp, like, well, we'll see when I get there. But, like, it was never anything that seemed. The only thing we ever heard from James Cook and his side was this number, $15 million, right? That's what we keep seeing and hearing and people putting out there. So when he does that, you know, we get to, okay, well, is he gonna hold in? That never happened. I think I got a little more clarity today just from listening to him. And I think the clarity is simply James Cook feels he's one of the best, if not the best, running back in the league, and he wants to be paid as such. And whether that's from the Buffalo Bills or someone else, that's what his goal is. His goal is to get that contract. He wants to get paid. He wants to be a good teammate while he's here. He loves his team. There's nothing that means that he doesn't, none of that, but he feels that he should be compensated what he's worth, and he feels he's worth top running back money.
It was interesting to hear him talk about his desire to get involved on third downs more than he has been, which I guess almost any involvement on third downs would be more than he has been, because he just that has not been his role. And said, like, somewhat authoritatively, I think he said, like, and I'm going to do that, right? I want pass blocking and all that stuff. And I thought, did Joe Brady talk this morning? Did he say anything about, was he asked about James Cook's role on third downs? Because I'm curious if the team shares what Cook's vision is, because his motivation to show he can do that part of the job, it would be obvious, right? I mean, that's, I hope he knows, maybe the biggest thing standing in his way of getting a big top-of-the-market contract for a running back is that he played less than 50% of the snaps. And a way to up that to 60 or 70% is to be more trusted on third downs.
Yeah, I know exactly how emphatic you're talking about, because he said it to me. He looked right at me. I asked him about what that means, right, when he says wanting to play on third down. I said, what does that mean, like, for you? Does that mean – I said, we know you – what I said was, hey, we know you can catch the ball out of the backfield. So does that mean being a better pass blocker and showing that you can handle those duties? And he said, yeah, everything. You know, even being better, you know, catching the ball. But he said, I want to be on third down, and I'm going to. And I took it more as not he's been told he's going to – I took it more as a confidence of, oh, yeah, I got this. Like,
I'm going to show them I can do it. Right.
Yep, yeah, exactly, yeah. Right. That's the way I took it. I agree. I think by his answer, Bulldog, he kind of knows, like, this is a barrier to him right now. Mm-hmm. This is something that he has to show. Now, maybe, I don't know this, speculation, maybe James Cook feels that he should be on third down more. Maybe he feels that the Bills are holding him back from being on third down, and he's done what he can do. I don't know, right? That's really interesting. Does he feel that if he was with another team, another coaching staff would trust him more on third down and give him a bigger role on third down? Maybe that's where some of this comes from, as far as making the money, where he feels, no, it's not me, like, not being on third down, which is causing this. It's you guys telling me I can't be on third down, but I know I can do that.
One thing, if this isn't too small a sample size, I want to think that it isn't. I mean, he was kind of famous for his drops 2 years ago. He had 6 officially. Yep. 11% of his targets were drops. And that season, this is 2023, 44 catches. And the total yards, like air yards, on those plays, 47. So it was a little bit down the field. Contrast that, might not sound like much. Contrast that to last year, 32 catches, a notch lower. The total yards in the air before being caught, -2. So, like, everything
that
was thrown to him was out in the flat, right, behind the line of scrimmage. And I think for him to get where he wants, the way you're talking, the way he was talking, is he's got to get to a point where they're going to throw him, you know, like, wheel routes or, you know, curls or something where he's, like, for first downs, you know, at the sticks. Mm-hmm. Because none of that went away. I mean, there was a little bit of that before. You can think New England is one. You can think of a couple of drops that were pretty, you know, egregious. But last year, they kind of took that out of their offense. They took that away from him.
Yeah, you're right. I think I go back to thinking about 2 years ago, not this past year, but a couple owners' meetings ago, Sean McDermott talking about that, like, type of philosophy on offense, which is, I really kind of took note when he's like, you know, you don't have to throw the ball downfield to, you know, get the ball downfield. You can throw it short and have a guy run. He said that at the owners' meetings 2 years ago. Well, lo and behold, that's exactly what you're talking about, Mike, which is, I have a running back here. I don't have to hand it to him. I'll just throw it to him as a running back and then let him do what he does. And James Cook's really good at that. I don't know if the drops from 2 years ago played into that. You know, last year, how they did this and how they worked it. They also have Ty Johnson, who's pretty good out of the backfield, mm-hmm. who can run some of those routes. They've run some of those wheel routes to him. So we'll see what the plan is. I mean, you know, going into this year, if it changes at all. But I expect a lot of that same stuff. I expect a lot of the touchdown he had today was that. It wasn't down the field. It was basically behind the line of scrimmage or right at the line of scrimmage from my angle. I was in the end zone. It was coming at me. And he caught it, and he just made a move and went down the field.
Anything to report on the cornerback 2 battle? I know it's only, you know, day 2 of training camp, but was there, you know, anything at all between White and Hairston notable today?
The only thing I'll tell you is that early on, there was an 11-on-11, and Josh threw the ball deep down the sideline to Keon Coleman, and Max Hairston was with him, stride for stride. So that was a good play by him. Again, let's see what happens when these guys get pads on. You're talking about a size difference there. Is there anything that happens differently, you know, through the course of that route? But that was nice coverage by Max Hairston. And then I did note that almost every time, not every time, almost every time, Tre'Davious White comes off the field, and Max Hairston comes on for him, they make eye contact, they pass each other, and they either exchange words or give a low five or a fist bump or something like that. I just think those things are, you know, notable, right? You've got a guy here who's a veteran. You know, the other guy's coming to take your spot, essentially. You know, Trey's kind of the penciled-in starter, I guess you'd say. And I think just shows Tre'Davious White's willingness to be a good teammate and say, look, I mean, this kid, I'm trying to help him. I'm not trying to hurt him.
Right. How about injuries today? There was Dorian Williams and A.J. Epenesa, I heard, left early. I didn't see any details on Epenesa, no. But you saw Williams after practice yourself, right?
I did. I didn't see any. I haven't not seen or heard anything about A.J. Epenesa's injury. In fact, I did not see either of them get hurt in any way. They both went to the trainer's tent area. But after practice, I did see Dorian Williams come out of the locker room as we were standing ready for press conferences. He walked up the stairs that lead to the dorm and lunch area, and he was on his own. He didn't have a trainer with him, a coach with him. He walked on his own, but he also had his lower right leg wrapped with like a sleeve on it, you know, a compression sleeve, I'd say. And then he had a pretty noticeable limp, I would say, but he did walk on his own, which is good. Dawson Knox was on the field today, not in a playing capacity, but working with a trainer off to the side. So obviously that's very good news for Dawson Knox to hopefully return, you know, sooner rather than later.
Recognizing that you said what you said about not watching the lines because there's no pads and there's not a lot to be gained there, but seeing as how Epenesa has come up, I'm wondering if it's crazy to think that maybe a good camp, a good preseason, just a good summer overall from Javon Solomon could put Epenesa in peril at all.
Agreed, and I think the team really likes Javon Solomon. I liked what I saw from Javon Solomon. Not that they don't like A.J. Epenesa, but this is a second-year player who I thought really showed some flashes when he played last year. I don't know if I've said to you guys, but if you go and look, I think Javon Solomon is the exact same size as Jerry Hughes.
Mm-hmm. Right?
He's like, it's you know, he's a undersized pass rusher, but you're talking about, you know, him putting a really nice college career together, putting numbers up. Getting to the passer doesn't have to translate, but a lot of times that position, it kind of can. So, I agree with you. I think if that's the case, you know, then maybe you're looking at an A.J. Epenesa, and I think they do save some money moving on from A.J. Not that I predict it necessarily here, but, you know, that might be a decision they have to make towards the end of training camp.
Sal, I believe I've read that you're going out tonight.
I mean, don't I go out every night?
Do you?
Here?
Maybe?
No, I am. We had a nice night last night over at the Pittsburgh pub, just a few media colleagues getting together and having some dinner and unwinding a little bit. But tonight, a little bit different. We're Matt Bovey and I are going to be headed over to Bar Bill East over on Empire Boulevard out here in Rochester. We're going to do our It's Always Game Day in Buffalo podcast live. And then if you're not there live, you don't watch it, you can always watch the recorded version, which is fine, obviously. We've done it the last 2 years. We've had a great crowd. We set up another camera and mic. If people want to come up and ask us questions, we can do that as well. I believe we're going to have a little bit of WGR swag out there as well. And Fiddlehead IPA is helping make it possible. So they're going to be out there. So we're going to have a really nice time tonight out at Bar Bill East.
Very good. Any questions for us?
Any questions
for Yankees?
Oh, yeah. No Yankees.
Four
Yankees.
More errors yesterday, Sal.
They lost. I wasn't going to mention it.
I know. You didn't ask me about the AFC East discussion. I was prepared for you to ask me about the AFC East discussion. So it's not necessarily I guess I'll ask you, did you ever read when Dan Shaughnessy, on a yearly basis, would write an article about the tomato cans the Patriots are facing in the AFC East?
No, but I'd believe it.
Yep. So he used to do this, and I used to read it every year and get mad. Like, come on, like somebody can. Your discussion reminded me of that. Are we overconfident? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, dude, the Patriots went through this for 20 years, and they just kept winning every single year. It did not matter.
Well, is that a fair comp? Maybe it is. I mean, nobody seems close right now.
Right.
To what the Bills are, so at least for now, it seems like that's maybe fair.
We know the Bills haven't had the, you know, overall successes then with the Lombardis and things like that, but you know, I just remember Dan Shaughnessy writing articles about how the Patriots once again have a bunch of tomato cans. They're playing in the AFC East, and I'll see you in January. I mean, seriously, right? And it kind of remind me of that, to be honest with you.
I know he wrote books about how the Red Sox didn't win championships because of ghosts. But I didn't know about this other.
I read a few of those books.
Brand,
yes,
yeah, because of ghosts. Turns out they were able to win somehow. They were able to overcome the ghosts.
The ghosts let them win. Finally,
change their minds.
That's what happened. Yeah.
Thank you, Sal. Should be a fun night.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
All right. That's our Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. Training camp coverage from St. John Fisher University is brought to you by Fiegel, Carr, and Joyce, your border attorneys, by Outlet Liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Connors and Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys, and driven by your Upstate Honda dealers for great deals on the entire Honda lineup. Visit your Upstate Honda dealer today.
I like hearing the name Jerry Hughes. Every time I hear that name, I get a little bit happy. I went to Twitter to see if he's – I don't think he's in camp anywhere, but I might be wrong. I haven't found out. But, you know, you search Jerry Hughes, and there his he's used Twitter many times. He's been on there. There's his handle. And there's other, this other guy, Jerry Hughes, Jerry Hughes 54, a different Jerry Hughes.
Mm.
And his bio says, views my own.
Okay.
So I went to it. He's never tweeted. And he joined 12 years ago.
The man has no views.
Unless he's replied to other people, and I'm not seeing any replies. Mm-hmm. He's got an account. He follows no one. He has his own views, but you don't get to know them. They're so his own that he's not sharing. That's actually a great bit. I'm going to have Twitter. I'm going to announce that these are my own views, but guess what? I'm not telling you what they are. They're so my own, I'm keeping them to myself.
Interesting that he went with Jerry Hughes 54. Jerry Hughes' number was 55, at least with the Bills. I don't know what he wore in Houston, but I
52
think it was...
52
okay.
In Houston.
Okay.
But this is a different guy.
Right.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, gotcha. Right.
A picture of a different guy.
Right.
Views my own, but they remain unknown to us, whatever they actually are. Mystery guest time. Not next, but we'll announce who it is. I think Bulldog will be happy about it, but I'm going to put him to the test here, see if he can figure out who it is. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog, that's coming up after sports here on WGR.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Filling up right behind the Bills bench right now with their flags and their hey, 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 hey.
Hey, hey, hey,
hey.
Hey,
hey, hey, hey. Let's go Buffalo chant.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Let's go. Happy Friday. The Bills wrapping up their third day of practice at training camp. Off tomorrow. Sal Capaccio with us now. Is tomorrow then also an off day for you, Sal?
Yeah, kind of, sort of, from work. Another baseball game to be a part of. I'll be here in Buffalo, and then I'll be heading back either. Haven't decided yet if I'm going back to Fisher tomorrow night or Sunday morning, but I got to be back there bright and early Sunday for sure.
You're painting a pretty good picture these last 2 days, at least, of a kind of a threatening downfield Bills offense. I don't mean to sound surprised. I'm aware they have the literal MVP at quarterback. I mean, there were years when we might have made that into a bigger story that they were sort of, you know, it was working down the field. But is that the right way to put it? You've been tweeting and writing about some highlights.
Yeah, I think so. And I would say today, Mike, they really just kind of used the whole field, right? Today was a day that was just more of a broader type of offense. It wasn't as situational maybe as the last couple of days where we had red zone or third down and things like that. So, yeah, today was a little bit more of using the entire field. And I thought that, again, today, a nice day to get the ball down the field a few different times. I think Joshua Palmer was the guy right up wrote about today who really the connection started happening. It's great. Like when you see one day it's one guy, one day it's another guy. It was Curtis Samuel yesterday, Joshua Palmer, and Keon Coleman, I think, starting to ramp up a little bit here and getting some balls thrown his way. So I thought Josh to Joshua today was a really good connection. And by the way, Josh Allen, I mean, he was just great the first like 7-on-7. We were, a few media members were on the sidelines going, are you kidding? Like, he is just throwing seeds and putting him in the exact right spot. And I think he had like maybe 7 or 8 of those, and then suddenly he threw one that seemed like maybe a miscommunication. Couldn't tell exactly what happened. Taylor Rapp had the interception. That was it. That was really the first and only mistake.
Yeah. It makes sense that they would be – we talked about this at the outset of our show today, that they would be trying to – so I don't know if redevelop is maybe too strong, that part of their passing game, because I feel like, Sal, the, you know, all defenses are taking it away. I mean, I think a lot of the time that's the case, but teams aren't always in the same defense, I don't think. So you got to know when you can fire your shot, you know, to, you know, shoot your shot, and you know, being ready to capitalize on that, I think, is important. It's a facet of their offense that was kind of lacking last year, as good as they were. They were great on offense last year, but they did not have much downfield.
it's amazing, right? You think about how great their offense was, how many points they scored, and yeah, they had to really kind of sustain drives more than get the ball downfield in one play. And when they tried, it just didn't happen. You know, if you go, guys, go back 2 years ago, that's the same thing. I mean, Josh and Stephon Diggs, just remember how many times they were just so close but they couldn't connect on a downfield pass, and Josh really hasn't had that downfield passing game come together for him in a couple of years. So I do think it's an area where they want to get better. I do think it's an area that they wanted to specifically target a couple of players. Joshua Palmer. Now, Joshua Palmer isn't the blazing, burning guy downfield, but he's very good at separation in his own right. He's a one-on-one man beater, and that can allow you to get downfield better. And then we know Elijah Moore can be that guy as well. So I do think that it's something they want to do a little bit more of, and they definitely want to be better at.
You also had a Kincaid highlight today, and for as many times we've talked about him, do you see the Bills making like the requisite effort to get him down the field more himself? I mean, not just the offense overall, but Kincaid, you know, not with exactly the motive of, you know, you've spent the number one pick on him like they did. I'm not thinking that they would be, sort of be of that mind. But still, you've got a talent here. You want to have him healthy. Maybe we're there now. Is more of a downfield to Kincaid strategy going to be a part of this?
Yeah, I think so, Mike. And we can actually use his play as our best of the day today in a minute when we talk about it, because that was the best thing I saw today. But just in him in general, like, I don't think they'll, like, I don't think they want to force him being on the field. You'd love for him to be on the field. I think it's got to come first from him. Whereas he's healthy, he's making a difference, he's a matchup guy that they really want to rely on. I look at the tight end room a lot of the way I look at the running back room, which is, you have this really talented guy, which he should be, in Dalton Kincaid, just like you kind of do in James Cook. And I understand I'm not comparing the two players necessarily to each other, but overall, you also have guys behind them who can play a little bit. Dawson Knox has done a nice job, right? He's not necessarily what Ty Johnson brings to the running back group, but he's a guy that you feel comfortable with, putting in a lot of different situations. And then they go out and get Jackson Hawes. I think Jackson Hawes really could help unlock Dalton Kincaid, and that is because he can play a little bit more. They can really lean into that 12 personnel they want to use, and they've wanted to use for a couple of years. And if he's on the field, the team has to get a little bit bigger because they see 12 personnel. Now you have Dalton Kincaid out there who might be a bit of a matchup for a safety because a team had to go a little bit bigger than they wanted to because they see 12 personnel. And Jackson Hawes, even though he's got a tight end number, he's out there to block, and you have to respect that.
Poor Zach Davidson. I feel like he is completely blocked, right? I mean, he's Kincaid, right? Pretty similar style player, right? Not someone that they're looking for as an inline blocker. I'm not saying he couldn't do it or, you know, if called on, but it's not what he's best at. He's sort of like, you know, I don't know, dollar store Kincaid, it feels like. And I don't know, that guy probably doesn't get a uniform.
Agreed. You know, he can make a nice practice squad career for a number of years and getting, you know, a nice little salary to play NFL football, and that's great. But ultimately, you want a shot to play on the field if you can. And, you know, I've always been impressed with him during training camp and during preseason because the guy just has great, great hands. But he's slight, and he's, you know, he's not very heavily built, and he's not going to help you in the running game. And I think that's the issue with, you know, Dalton Kincaid, as we know, whereas can you help in the running game? Can you get bigger and stronger? Can you withstand the rigors of the NFL? So I agree with you. And, you know, the other guy is Quentin Morris, who's gone. You know, Quentin Morris was a big part of this team over the last few years. He actually played in some situational football for them, mainly at special teams, but he could play in a pinch. And there were times where he had to get on the field, but, you know, he's no longer on the team. That was one of the only real losses they had. It was the wide receivers, Mac Hollins and Amari Cooper, and it was Quentin Morris, really. That was all from the entire offense. So that's where Jackson Hawes come into play. But you're right about Zach Davidson. I agree. Poor Zach Davidson. Maybe his shot. You know, the guy was a punter in college, too, by the way. He's a really good athlete. Maybe his shot just has to come with another team down the road.
The rare tight end slash punter. Central Missouri State, by the way, Zach Davidson. Well, we were on Kincaid. You already gave us the tease. The best play of training camp today brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Get a Northtown Engine Shield engine protection warranty on new and used vehicles. Let's hear about it.
Yeah, Josh Allen, 11 on 11, Dalton Kincaid. He's running basically like a fade slash corner pattern down the left sideline. You see the ball in the air. You see Kincaid. You know he's tracking it. It's going to get there. Like, I could see from my vantage point about 20 yards away, like, okay, this is a good pass. Like, he has a chance at this ball. But Cam Lewis was right there. Cam Lewis, I think, has had a really strong start here the first few days. And he's just Mr. Steady, as you guys know. But he's not the biggest guy, right? Dalton's got some height on him. That's one of the, he's one of the smaller DBs. Cam is in great position, but it didn't matter. That ball was just thrown perfectly over the shoulder, the left shoulder it would be for Dalton Kincaid. He comes down with it. Guys, Cam Lewis goes to the ground as he's trying to make the play. And they both went to the ground. They weren't trying to tackle. It's just the way the play develops. And right after it, Cam Lewis gets up, looks at Dalton Kincaid with the ball in his hand, and just, like, shakes his head as if, I cannot believe he made that play.
Right. Speaking of Cam Lewis, there's a couple of rookie defensive backs here on the depth chart, and I wonder if Lewis should be looking over his shoulder, hearing footsteps, however you want to put it. They're not exactly... well, we'll see how versatile they are, because that is Cam Lewis's calling card, right? But Jordan Hancock and Dorian Strong, I don't want to confuse the two. I see Strong listed as a boundary corner and Hancock as a free safety. One of those two is being used in a variety of ways, though, similar to Lewis. Is he not?
Yeah, that is Jordan Hancock. Jordan Hancock, when he was drafted, I mean, immediately you're like, oh, this is Cam Lewis. Like, he's exactly what Cam Lewis is. He is a back. He's a nickel corner and a safety. And they have, from the jump, they've been telling us, we're going to use him in both places. We just have to figure out where he fits best and where to use him most. So there's a number of different ways you can go about this, Bulldog. It's a really great conversation and discussion, because Cam Lewis has been so valuable to them at safety and at nickel corner. Like, you don't want to lose that, but at the same time, if you have a really younger guy, went to Ohio State, good player, he can play both, you could say, okay, well, guess what? You know, it's time to move on. It's time to go younger. But at the same time, I believe, and I think this is how it might shake out, where they may say, look, instead of having these guys train at both spots, we can keep them versatile, but why doesn't Cam just become our main backup nickel and he can play special teams? And Jordan Hancock is a main backup safety where we don't have to put more on the plate. And then he can gain a little bit more on his plate as we go. I think there's room for both guys on this team. I really do. That doesn't guarantee it. There's only a finite number of spots, and it's a crowded defensive back room. Dorian Strong is mainly a boundary corner, but he can also play a little bit inside, and he says he prides himself on being able to do those things. I mean, the guy he's a bigger dude. He's built like he looks like an NFL corner. Dorian Strong's dad is a professional bodybuilder and weightlifter.
Can't be bad.
It's the guy who knows his way around a weight room, you would assume. I wonder if maybe Dane Jackson is the guy that's hearing footsteps when you say his name.
You know what, Bulldog? I did a projected 53 recently, and I have to be honest, I didn't have Dane Jackson on. I think it's a numbers game, and that's not because I don't think Dane Jackson can play. I think he can. But who are you? Are you going to release Dorian Strong and subject him to waivers? Like, that's a tough call to make. How can you do that? You're not releasing Jordan Hancock. You have Tre'Davious White. You have Max Harrison. Jamarcus Ingram and Dane Jackson, to me, could be fighting for one spot, but Jamarcus Ingram is versatile. He plays inside. He plays outside. You know, the thing about Jamarcus Ingram is he can play safety, and he can play dime safety, and he's done that. Like, boy, that's really valuable for this team, to be able to guy to come in and play that role, right? And he took over for, you know, Cam Lewis, or when Christian Benford was hurt and they had to, you know, go through a couple guys. I'm sorry, maybe not Benford, but a couple guys were hurt over this year. And, you know, Damar Hamlin and, boy, Jamarcus Ingram played a nice role for them. So it is a crowded defensive back room. There's not enough spots for everybody. And I agree with you. I think Dane Jackson could be the guy at the end of the day who's maybe on the outside looking in.
And further,
and by the way, Damar Hamlin, for that matter.
Right.
I mean, Damar Hamlin could be a guy that at the end of the day, like, where does he fit? Derek Forrest was signed, and I think they like him as a backup safety, but if you're putting Jordan Hancock there, you have Cam Lewis, where do these spots come from?
Further complicating numbers in the secondary is that their primary returner is a corner as well, that I don't know, you know, I know he played the finale, but it's not a guy that gets snaps as a corner. He's here to return kicks, and you already have an overcrowded room there. That could be challenging.
Yeah, that's Brandon Codrington, and I think, you know, you guys know, we've talked about it enough that I'd be surprised. I'm here to tell you, I think I'd be surprised if Brandon Codrington isn't on this team. I think he's the main punt returner, and I don't care what position he plays. I think the Bills just need a guy they really trust, and that could have DB next to his name or wide receiver next to his name. But yes, there's always that possibility and chance as people bring up and tell me, and I agree with them, that, man, if you get to it and you just got to save a roster spot, you might have to go with Elijah Moore. But, man, the Bills, they treat that position as a position.
Yeah.
They don't treat the position as, well, where's a guy who plays somewhere? And not for nothing, they've been working Brandon Codrington inside. And I think that's to make sure that, hey, if we're going to keep him, let's make sure he has a spot just in case something happens and we can use him in a pinch.
I was planning to ask you about him because I read from your article, I believe, that Sunday when the Bills are back at work, it'll be the special teams coordinator that speaks. And I don't have much for specific questions about special teams at this point. Say what you want in the chat. I mean, I do the best I can here. But Codrington, I think your take on this is very logical. You know, and plus including the fact that you'd want to have some better confidence.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Out here, it's not only the amazing views, but the way time stretches out a little longer, how laughter bellows louder among friends, and how the breeze hits just right at the summit. With All Trails, you can discover and experience the best of nature with over 450,000 trails worldwide and navigation right at your fingertips. Find your outside with All Trails. Download the free app today and find your next outdoor adventure.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side-effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven, non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's Radio 15 for 15% off today.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
That he could play on defense if needed. But punt returner and kick returner, he might be tough to unseat.
I agree, and that's where I come from. Now, I get it. He did not play last year in the playoffs. They went to Khalil Shakir. Well, Khalil Shakir just got paid $58 million. He's not returning punts this year. Sorry, that's not happening. Now, you could put him back there in a pinch like you did Micah Hyde for a few times the last few years. That's fine. But the reason why they used Khalil Shakir was twofold. It was because Brandon Codrington was dealing with an injury. And even though he might have been able to play on Sunday, if he can't get all his reps and do everything, if you're not super confident throughout the week, so you using guys back there and, you know, making sure that you're buttoned up, when it comes time for Sunday, you're like, all right, let's not let anything wrong. He's coming off this injury. All right, let's go to Khalil Shakir. And the second reason is Khalil Shakir's done it. He's good at it. They trust him there. It's funny, guys. I talked to Brandon Codrington today about this, and I said, what does Sean McDermott look for in a punt returner? he actually surprised me in his first word. He said aggressiveness. He said, right. And then he said, but first you do have to make sure you catch the ball. You've got to catch the ball. He said, but he wants us to be aggressive. And I thought, all right, that's a really good answer to hear from Brandon Codrington.
Yeah, wouldn't most fans have guessed catch the ball would be the first thing he would say? He did get to it, right? But aggressiveness is an interesting take. Before we leave the secondary, Tre'Davious White spoke today. And that just listening to him talk about being able to work out like a normal player would work out, like prior to all the injury troubles. I mean, it was, you know, two off seasons in a row that got derailed really for him by injuries and not really being able to train normally. And hearing him talk about that and how, I don't know, quite call him defiant, but like, man, I feel like he might be hard to move off of that corner two spot. And it's only 3 days into camp.
Listen, I think that Max Harrison has to really go out there and show that he can win it. You know, Tre'Davious White is a great team player. Every time I see those guys kind of sub in and out for each other, they're dapping each other up, giving a high five, whatever, it's great. But Max Harrison wants that job, and Tre'Davious White wants the job as well. I mean, he's a competitor. He's going to do whatever he can. I think that it's going to be tough as well, and that's because Tre'Davious White, I think, is very, very determined to get back to being Tre'Davious White. Now, I don't think that there's, you know, going to be, I don't think we're looking at all pro Trey from a few years ago, but if this guy, you know, the way that he works, the way that he thinks, I think he has every belief in the world that he can be really, really good player in the NFL still. And he has plenty of time still to do that. The other part of it is, boy, Bulldog, I mean, you can remember when he got hurt, right? And we had discussions about like how he handled it with the media, the things he said when he finally came back. We didn't talk to him for quite a while. Like, this is a guy that he really, really dealt with a lot mentally when those injuries happened. And it's so funny. I watch him, talk to him, see his interactions. It just feels to me, and I think it's clear to everybody, that he is so unlocked and free right now compared to that. He really is. And, you know, as personally, as someone who's married to a mental health counselor, as, you know, people, you guys who know how much that particular piece in life has become so much more, so much bigger that people talk about and recognize. And the fact that he's in Buffalo, where Sean McDermott and this regime and this organization really take that to heart. They want guys to embrace the mental health aspect of it. And Sean always says it is a strength, not a weakness, to make sure you're talking to people and make sure you're in a good headspace. Like, I just think all of that is really coming around for Tre'Davious.
How close to 100%, like whatever peak would be for him at age 30, does he say he is?
I don't know. Did they say that today? I'm not really sure. I don't know. I can't answer that because I can't remember if he said anything.
Okay. I just wonder, like, what does he have left is the bottom line here. I mean, he's feel good in a lot of ways. The other guy's a first-round pick this year. Like, he's going to get on the field himself. So I just wonder, like, after the Rams experience and then Baltimore, what it's fair to expect from Trey White.
Yeah, I think it's fair too. And yeah, I don't know if we're going to know until we get out there. Look, during OTAs and minicamp, I love the way he was moving, but then he got beat a couple of times by Elijah Moore down the field, right? So, you know, we can talk all we want about this stuff, but he's got to go out there and prove it. He's got to show that he can still, you know, hang with receivers down the field. I think that Tre'Davious White has every belief in himself. He has every confidence in himself. If we did ask him that question, he'd say, I'm 100%. I feel 100% like I can go out there and be everything I've always been. I think more than anything that mental component is so big from him. When he talked, when he resigned about how he did not know, and how could he ever know that was going to be his last time on the field with Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, the perspective he got after leaving the organization and being with other teams and being away from those guys, away from the Buffalo Bills. And I remember talking to him. We talked about this guy's when it happened. Tre'Davious White said to me in the tunnel, after he just had his season end against the Baltimore Ravens, we were walking up the tunnel together, and I said, hey, man, you're going to be a free agent at the end of the year. No, what do you think? And I kind of like jokingly said, you want to come back? And he goes, oh, I'd love to be back here. I've already let it be known to people.
Wow, right after that game ended. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it really will be interesting because the last time the Bills used a first-round pick on a corner, he couldn't get on the field. And so, like, and it's Tre'Davious White. It's not just some guy that nobody knows, right? The organization knows him. There's emotions there. But the team, I think, would be motivated, kind of like Mike said a minute ago, to get Harrison on the field. And I don't know if they'd be thinking at all about Kyer Elam in this, but I'm sure fans will be. Oh, we got another corner that can't. If Tre'Davious White wins that job, it's gonna be loud because you got another corner that couldn't win the job that was drafted in the first round, like Elam, and like that's a tough brush to paint a kid with in Hairston, who hopefully will turn out better here than Elam did, but it could get complicated.
I agree. It will be loud. Will it be fair, though, I think is the question, right?
Sure.
Is it fair to go, well, here's another first rounder that can't get on the field? It might have nothing to do with Max Harrison, right? I think eventually we realized it was more on Kyer Elam than it was anything else.
Right.
Christian Benford did a nice job to win the job, and look who he is now. But, you know, Kyer Elam never really was able to hit, and now he's with another organization. This might be because Tre'Davious White's just making it too hard, and, you know, he's a guy that was an all-pro not too long ago, and you know, he comes back and they can trust him. They know what to expect from him. And, you know, I don't know if that's fair to put on Max Harrison, but I agree with you because of the other part of that, which is when people say Sean McDermott doesn't play rookies and, you know, he's too tough to play rookies. And I don't think that's fair at all either. But the reality is that Max Harrison might not be on the field week one. It might be Tre'Davious White.
Sal, I'm mostly kidding when I say we missed one here. For all the time, quote, time and effort we put into trying to predict the schedule, I could have used to know this rivalry game thing and might have had a better chance of predicting the Bills and the Patriots would play in prime time, for example, wearing these fancy uniforms.
Well, okay, you're right. I don't think that, because I knew, like, it was announced a while ago that the NFL would do that, even before the schedule, I believe, that there was going to be this rivalry thing, and it did say it will be a division game, but I never thought, well, you're going to put a prime time game against New England for that. I just thought, okay, maybe a Sunday 1 o'clock game is you have these rivalry uniforms. Who knows what it's about? But, yeah, now they've announced it, and it made sense. Once the schedule came out, though, I did a little reverse tracking here, and I said, oh, you know what? I bet you that's the rivalry game. Like, why else are you going to have New England here on a Sunday night, Diggs return, all that? Like, to me, that's the rivalry game. That's where they're going to put it. Thursday night, Miami makes sense anyway. But why do you put New England on? Okay, that's perfect, because now we already knew. Then once they said the Jets were going to be that last game with the red helmets, it totally made sense. You only had two choices anyway. It's got to be that game. But you're right. No, we kind of didn't know that. But I know that people have to wait till August 28th. I mean, I have people telling me, don't worry, it'll be worth the wait. So we'll see. I know there's a video of the guys looking at it for the first time going, holy cow, these are great.
And not all the games are going to be night games. Like the Jets and the Dolphins is in, I think, week 14, and that's not a primetime game. So it would have just been, I'm sure it was me who missed it, not that the league didn't tell us it was coming, but just would have been one more thing I could have, had I been smarter.
Thrown into the sauce.
Factored, thrown into the sauce. Oh, well.
Well, two things real quick. Number one, you have to remember now, so that means they're going to wear their rivalry uniform, that Nike Rivalry Series, week 5 against the Patriots. They're going to wear their AFL Throwback Classic Standing Buffalo, week 6 at Atlanta Monday night, then week 11 against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and then week 18, you know, they're wearing the throwback red helmets. So that's 4 times this year they'll be wearing a non-normal 2025 Buffalo Bills uniform. The other thing is, just to follow up on yesterday, guys, remember I said to you yesterday, boy, I bet you Matt Milano played linebacker in high school, right?
The running way that back. Running back, you said, yeah.
I'm sorry, running back, yes, running back in high school. Saw his dad today. I know Matt's dad a little bit. I saw his dad. I said, I got to ask you a question. I said this on the radio, and he goes, oh, Sal, he was phenomenal as a running back in high school. And his high school team went to the state championship game. He said, they also had a couple other good guys, so they actually used them, unfortunately, at tight end maybe a little bit more than they should have in the state championship game. But he said, oh, he was great at running back in high school. And I said, all right, I could see it. Because the vision, right? The vision at linebacker reminds me a lot of a vision of a running back. So I followed up. And sure enough, Matt Milano played running back in high school, and apparently he was very good.
All right. Enjoy your weekend. Bills in pads on Monday. We'll talk again then.
All right. You got it, guys.
All right. There you go. Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. And training camp coverage here on WGR is brought to you by Fiegel, Carr, and Joyce, your border attorneys. by Outlet Liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Connors and Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys, and driven by your Upstate Honda dealers for great deals on the entire Honda lineup. Visit your Upstate Honda dealer today.
We'll take a break. Come back after sports. Lines open for your calls at 803-0550. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
When MLB talent takes the field, reactions get loud.
Aaron Judge with a blast.
Oh, my God!
Full scheme.
Struck him out with 102.
Laser beam.
Ohtani, inevitable.
Walk off, baby. This is the best.
Witness baseball greatness for yourself at the ballpark. Baseball is something else.
Yes!
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.